Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, A Life Among the Dead, Stories from an Irish Funeral Director, is the new book by David McGowan, and David joins me in studio. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Is this a memoir? Is that, would you call it a memoir?
Well, I don't know what you call it. It started off one, and then it became a story, and then I start to reflect on a lot of the stuff that I've seen, you know, in my career as a funeral director in Embalmer, in my journey in the profession. So then it came, it became something completely different. It became talking about grief and the whole science around death. And then the producer came out, well, we need to know a little bit more about yourself. So I said, well, what do you want to know about myself? Well, the reader always likes to know about the person that's written. So what it is, I don't know.
It's a bit of everything.
It's a bit of everything. But if my objective is, and the reason I wrote is, spun out of the documentary.
Yes.
Now, I was a little bit afraid about that documentary because anytime you talk about death, it's very sensitive and people are very sensitive around the loss of a loved one. And I didn't want to offend anybody. And you could easily do that. So I was a bit sceptical about the documentary because death in itself, it's awkward to bring up and talk about in front of people. You know, you'll always say to somebody, so will you ever shut up there and don't be mentioning that? You know, we talk about something else. So I was a little bit nervous, but when the doc came out, the documentary, the funeral director, it opened up a whole new language about, I won't say, it kind of normalised it, if you know what I mean. And people got a lot of closure from it. So then when it became, when it went on to Netflix, obviously people were looking at it. So they don't look at it unless they have an interest in it. So then the book companies came after me, a few of them, to see would I be interested, who watched the documentary. And I thought, well, after the reaction from the documentary, I said, why not? It's good to get people talking about something. Because I am of the belief, if you never talk about something, you'll always have a fear of it.
And this is the thing, you know, that phrase that people say, sure, why would you be afraid of the dead? It's the living you should be afraid of. And yet I was trying to, in my head this morning, I was chatting to my wife, why are we so spooked by death and dead bodies? You know, because that's your life. Dead bodies is your life and has been since what? You encountered your first dead body at 15. So 50 years of dealing with dead bodies.
Yeah.
Why are we so spooked by dead bodies?
I don't know. And I don't know why. Well, I can understand why it's a taboo subject to talk about. You know, there's a fear there. And the fear is the loss. For somebody to lose a loved one, it's the biggest loss any human being will ever experience in their lifetime. It's irreplaceable. Mm. It's a lot of memories and stuff. So nobody wants to see death come around their house.
No.
And I think that's the hysteria that's built around it, that it's so fearful that we don't talk about it.
Okay, so let's go to another way then. So your objective is to get people talking about it, demystify some of the science around it. Is that part of it as well? Because there's a good bit of that in the book. And get people to understand maybe the grieving process.
Right. Grief is a different thing.
Right.
Grief, you're putting up with the loss and you're dealing with the loss. It's a process. The loss itself, like if you break up with your boyfriend or break up for your girlfriend or whatever, you will grieve for a period of time. But to lose somebody that will never be back again or you'll never see them, it's like putting your hand inside your chest and just ripping out your heart.
Yeah.
You know, your loved one is gone. Then after that, how do you deal with the loss? And that's called the grieving process. And there are several stages to that process. And it's a minefield.
And we're going to hop here, there, and everywhere. So what you deal with brilliantly in the book is how people react initially to the death of a loved one, and everybody deals with grief differently. And you have a story there which probably is a blend of loads of different stories of a family coming in, and they all have different ideas, say, about how their mother should be dressed, what the funeral should be, and they're all acting out their grief, and you're witnessing it. And they find it hard to agree on anything in particular. And I suppose if we were more cognizant of the fact that everybody grieves differently, we might be more tolerant of how people behave. Do you think?
There's another thing there, that there's a whole minefield of emotions that kick in when you lose somebody. We also have what I think called a culture. You will hear people say that we do death good in Ireland. And the reason that has kicked off is all stemmed from what they refer to around the world and still here is the wake.
Mm.
And the wake is where people come together and they have a vigil around that person. They strongly believe that that person there in front of them that carried the spirit during their lifetime still has to be celebrated. And we can't move that person straight away because the spirit is still very close. Mm. And what they do is not alone do they sit as vigil, they protect and mind the person. Whenever I get a call in any of my funeral homes, the word is like, when can we have our mother back? When it's not how many limousines have you or how much flowers you have. The first and initial question is, when can we have mother back into the house? When can we sit around her and mind her? And that's unique to Irish people, because most countries that I travelled and tried to study the culture, some of them had very little culture towards death and dying. But we are so steeped in this Irish community.
Why do you think that's the case?
Why do I think? Right. I did a tour of Ireland there back about 20 years ago because I was interested in the whole spirituality of the whole thing. And I wanted to know, for instance, how they coped in poor times in Ireland, you know. And they coped because they had a lot of faith, but they also believed in the spiritual world. They believed that the spirit was around. Now, these were the generation of people that knew whether it was going to rain tomorrow by the way the birds flew. So they always felt, take for instance, in the Catholic tradition, we have what they call a month's mind mass. Now, a lot of people wondered, what's the significance of a month's mind mass? Well, the older people always said that they could sense a presence of the spirit for at least 28 to 30 days. And then it was decided to have a mass to release that spirit. And it became the name as a month's mind mass. Mm. But the thing here, the thing here is that they felt the presence.
Right.
Now, my life as a funeral, 45 years in the business, I have seen things that you couldn't say were coincidences that happened in around funerals. And I state them in the book and I tell them of my experience. Yeah. Now you can.
Well, tell them the story about the hearse breaking down on the bridge in Ballina.
I would have stories every funeral. I have only mentioned quite a few.
Yeah.
I mean, the hearse, and I'm sure there are a few funeral directors out there that could say they've seen the same thing, you know. Like, how do you explain a brand new hearse breaking down at a spot and me then afterwards preparing to meet them to apologise the next day for the embarrassment I created in front of everybody and trying to figure out, well, will I give them discount or what will I do or whatever? And before I could open my mouth when I met them, they run on the hug you and started kissing you. And you're like, what happened? How did you know to stop at Dad's favourite place? Like, I didn't know. Yeah. Like, then you bring that same brand new hearse that you paid £150,000 for to a mechanic and he puts it into a laptop and he said, there's nothing wrong with this.
How do you explain that?
Like, but there's loads.
Then the dead body, you try to apply makeup, which is part of what you do, and we'll get to embalming in a moment.
Mm.
And the makeup was refusing to stay on the face.
That's right, yeah. I was a young enough lady, and young enough ladies like to apply makeup and stuff like that, and we're taking the person home. And again, as I stated as we started this talk, I said, all we're getting is phone calls, when is mum coming,
when is mum coming?
It's the pressure to get her out to us so we can mind her.
Mm.
We can surround her and we can mind her in that room. And that creates a lot of solace and comfort. So I'm conscious of that. So here I do the preparation and everything is going grand and she looks grand. And then I started to apply the makeup. And did you ever get a stitch in your back and you'd lift and you'd stretch it? That happened to me 3 times during the preparation. And I'll cut the story short now. I went and checked my cosmetics, see whether I was dazed, because the cosmetics was actually not staying. Now, if you take a foundation and put it on, most women will know, if you put it on a sponge and just rub it, it'll apply to the face evenly and it'll be fine and you rub it through. This was going on in a blob. Like, it was like as if there was water in it or something.
Yes,
it was. Anyway, I tried and tried, but the phone kept ringing. You told us that you'd be here an hour ago and you extended to an hour. We rang again, it's another hour. So at this stage, I said, you know what? I'll explain to them. They need the mum home. And I'll explain to them that, look, it just wasn't working for me. So anyway, we took the lady home and laid her out in the room. And normally I would keep a family outside in case the movement in the body in the transportation or something like that. I wouldn't have the family in the room and take off a lid straight away because then things could happen and they'd be upset. So I asked the family to stand out, took off the lid, and before I got a chance, they bolted in the door. I mean, they wanted to see their mother, whatever. So I didn't get a chance to explain to them. So I stood outside and said, let them have their moment and then I'll talk to them. I didn't get that chance because they bolted out the door and started hugging me and kissing me, nearly knocked me over actually, and said, how did I know not to put makeup on Mammy? Now, I didn't know not to put makeup on. I was blaming the McGarrys. So there are lots and lots of stories like that. And that leads me to believe, I don't want to force my opinion on anybody. Everybody's entitled to their opinion of what happens and how our life goes and how we're, you know, do we believe in God or do we believe in... Everybody's entitled to their opinion and I appreciate that. But my journey, spending time with deceased people and bereaved people, things that I've witnessed and seen that are unexplainable are in that book.
Yeah. Mm. You do say in the book that on one occasion that this wasn't time to mind myself, that you had to consider the family. And I was wondering about minding yourself, constantly surrounded by death for over 40 years. Mm. Does that drag you down?
As we say, 14, I think I handled my first deceased person. And that would have been a frightening experience for any young teenager at that age of time. But it didn't fear me for some reason or another, do you know? And it didn't knock a hip out of me, even though I was concerned about it. And I was put down at the feet to lift the feet in. And the word used in rural Ireland at that time was put the person overboard. And I was just working in the bar. And there was no teaching or there was no training. It was, come on, you, I want you to go to the house with me to put the person overboard.
Overboard.
I'm sure I didn't know what I was doing. So I just automatically sat into the hearse and there I touched. But what... the person I laid him in, it didn't bother me. But what I did notice, and I do remember, of the community,
the mel
coming around the house, the sandwiches and the bread and all the thing. All the women in the house were inside cleaning the house and all of that, and the men were outside in the garden, discussing smoking pipes and all sorts of things, discussing the more physical aspect like digging the grave and all that type of thing. So, but the large community, and you know, to see them coming. And then it was done kind of, you know, that's the time they were tying bandages around to the head because they didn't know the science of death.
Yeah, and you know the science. So I'm just, because your dad bought Paddy Brown's pub in Easky 50 years ago this year, actually. Mm. And with it came the undertaker's business, which your dad was reluctant to take on.
That's correct, yeah. He bought a pub and a shop. And at that time, a foot of a counter was as good as an acre of land. That was the presumption.
Right.
I mean, the village of Easky was one school, one secondary school, but there were seven pubs. And it was like most rural towns. Now, this particular building that my father bought, pub and shop, had a hearse attached to the building for about two generations prior to that. So when he seen the hearse, he didn't buy the hearse at first. He said, I didn't want it. I don't know anything about debt, but I do know there's... pub is a good business, and that's what was focused on that. And he did ring the auctioneer, and there were said 12,500 he paid for the pub and shop in 1974.
Yes,
but if he wanted the hearse, it was an additional 1,500.
Right,
so he said he didn't want it. So anyway, the solicitors came back to him and said, well, it's been part of the house, part of the business, and it was the duty of the owners of this to carry out that funeral service. He said, I didn't want it. They came back to him and said, well, you don't really have to do anything. All you have to do is turn up with a hearse, a coffin and four screws.
Right.
Nurse so-and-so is out the road. She does the laying out. Johnny Gavney does the digging of the graves. And Mount Jimmy Colvin does this job. Yeah. So there was a list of names given to him. So he decided to give it a go then. And because it was attached to the business... And I was moved into the bar and working in the bar and working all sorts of hours or whatever. And every now and again, whenever the time arose, we were asked, come out and polish a coffin or lift a coffin into the hearse. And when I was 15, I think it was, come on, you, I need you to come and put somebody overboard.
Yeah.
So that was the smallest part of the business. And the smallest part of the business is what I took.
Wasn't your dad lucky that you took to it? I'm wondering, because I was reading, you did an interview for the Sunday Independent with Lee Dawn. And in it you say that, I think you mentioned that your dad might have been jealous of your success at one stage, was it?
I don't know. I didn't, myself and my father didn't have a great working relationship. No.
He was a businessman.
He was, and a very good one. But, you know, like, for instance, third level education wasn't an option for us growing up. You go in and work in the family business and that's it. And most of the time you didn't get paid to do it.
Right.
And I figured out at one stage, I said, I'm here in the bar pulling pints of Guinness at 17, 16. I don't want to be a drunkard's labourer all my life. And I just took off like everybody else in the village and decided to follow my passion. I call it a passion. Some people can call it a calling. I think when I went and seen and lifted that person for the first time, as they said that time, to put them overboard.
Yeah.
I knew it was a challenge to do this right for both the deceased and the bereaved who had lost that person. And I think that ignited my calling to help those people.
And that's seeps out of every page in the book, that your passion to do it right and to make sure that the bereaved don't have to sort of, I suppose, have the burden of other things other than losing their loved one.
Correctly. Yeah. And I didn't know what that was till I went to the States and entered the... Remember now, there's no training facilities for anyone
for
in
embalmers
Ireland.
For embalmers.
In Ireland. Now, I do have school. I set up a school when I came back from America because I knew there was a need for it. But there's no regulation. You don't have to be licensed to do carry out funeral service in Ireland. You don't have to be licensed to be an embalmer. It's crazy.
That sounds odd.
Yeah, I know. When I go to America and giving talks at these funeral conventions, they're like looking at me with two heads when I tell them it's not regulated in this country. And I have fought to get it regulated, but I'm not so sure now. I'd have a different opinion there.
Why so?
Well, COVID taught us a lot, like. And, you know, I knew the science around death and COVID, and I knew it was quite safe to embalm these people and that they didn't have to be put into body bags or anything like that. And I tried to tell people in authority, and they just didn't listen to me. But I kept doing it with my kids, and I kept reaching out to different organisations. Please do not be doing this. This is hurtful. This is painful for families, and it doesn't need to happen. So, if you give one...
Can I stop you there? So the science is that if somebody dies of a disease, in this case COVID, that there is no possibility that the dead body can transmit COVID to a living person.
Correct.
Right. Yes. That's it.
And anybody that says any different has zero knowledge of the effects of our chemicals on COVID. It's about 10 times stronger than hand sanitizer.
Right.
And these people do not get up and sneeze or cough.
No.
And it was awful to think that we're so steeped, and our culture, rituals and traditions around death was ripped apart during COVID.
Body bags, it's just...
Body bags, and people didn't get to see their loved ones.
No.
Now, that's not true in our place. We continuously to dress them. Even these are people who...
But you didn't break regulations at the time.
The only regulation, there was no rules.
Right.
This is the crazy...
No rules around death.
It was crowd control. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And we adhered to all of those.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But when it comes to the deceased person...
You don't like the word corpse. You say that in the book.
Well, corpse and the older funeral director gives me the thought, the grim reaper. I would look at death differently. I think of death differently. I think the spiritual world is much greater than this world down here, with all the things I've seen. And I think we're on this planet for a very short period.
So do you believe that the people you deal with are going somewhere else?
Oh, I've gone
somewhere else, obviously.
I know they're around for a very short time. I know they're around for about the 28 or 30 days. I know the presence is there.
Right.
Now, they do move off somewhere else. That place, I don't know it.
Right.
But I do know they move off somewhere. But I do know they're very close. They're very close, and they can come.
And for that reason, then, you don't like the word corpse.
I don't want it puts a shiver up my spine or something, you know. I don't believe we should be tagged as a corpse. Like, we're still human beings. And then there's a spirit there that goes on to the next world. Mm. And I think that place is a happy place. I know when I spend time around deceased people, I find a lot of calmness. I find a lot of solace and comfort being with them. I've lived with deceased people all my life.
Yes.
That's why I called the book A Life Among the Dead.
Because when you went to Chicago, you were living over one,
there was 30
one
people.
Mortuary.
There was,
and then there was the big business in Chicago, you were living upstairs as well.
That's right. There was 30 people there. And all
30 dead people?
Yeah, in the room every time. And me on my own in the building with them. And all my friends in the Irish community would say to me, how can you live over things?
Yeah,
and
my answer it's a fair enough question.
Yeah. But my answer to them was, well, I'm there all my life with them and they never done me any harm.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of confidence. But I would see things. I would see a lot of things happening. And I mentioned only a fraction of them in the book, but let the reader take it themselves. But I do believe...
But not to go into... Because you do say at the beginning of the book and the beginning of the chapter on the science of death that people may want to avoid this.
Correct.
They may not want to read it. Mm. But things do happen after a person dies. There are all sort of chemical reactions within the body and they can cause noises and things that may be misinterpreted for something else. Is that fair enough to say?
Oh, yeah. But yeah. I mean, one cessation of life occurs. Nature's way is to get rid of us.
Yes.
We start off as a cell. They group together, make tissues. Tissues group together, make organs. Organs group together, make systems, and systems make a human body.
Right.
Okay. In the order of decomposition, isn't it strange? It's the very same way. The cells are
backwards.
The first.
The cells decompose first.
Yeah.
And your job as an embalmer then is to slow down that process.
Only slow down. Out there to create a mummy, and nobody has ever tried to do that either.
Yes.
The name embalming has been tagged with the process. And they don't.
There's a new name for it now, a more modern name.
I refer to it as hygienic treatment because it's like dialysis, really.
Right.
And it's not mummification.
No.
Because I've exhumed bodies where bodies were buried in the wrong grave after 3 and 4 months. And when I'd open those coffins.
What's that like?
You would see nature kicking in, yeah? No matter how well the body has been embalmed. So it's returning to the earth.
Yeah.
You have to remember every element found in your body can be found in the soil. That's why a priest in the Catholic tradition takes a shovelful of soil, clay, and he spills it over the coffin, he ashes to ashes, and dust to dust. You go back to where you came from.
Yeah.
And where bodies are 80% water, and the bacteria that's within you, to keep you alive, actually turn on you, and they love a watery environment, and that's nature's way of bringing us.
Decomposing us.
Yeah, well, it just brings us back to the skeleton.
And you talk about all the various types of death, the long deaths, sudden deaths, deaths of young people, very tragic deaths and rescuing bodies. And you want us to talk more about death. I'm wondering, because I know in the documentary, Dougie, you were there as Dougie planned his funeral. Mm. Have you planned yours?
Yeah, I told the girls whatever they think. I have three daughters.
Yes. Breed, we've met Breed in a number of occasions. Great
life
musician.
I was looking for one. I ended up with four.
I have four year wife, that's alien, and the two girls.
So forgetting the parents, I think. But
you've told them what about your funeral?
Well, to be honest with you, it depends on. I don't care whether they cremate me or bury me, to be honest with you. Because whichever they choose, you return to a skeleton anyway.
Mm.
So your ashes is not your hair, or your skin or your nails or anything like that. It's bone dust. That's what it is. So after 5 years in the ground, you're going to return to that anyway.
Yes.
So to me, the only thing with cremation is you have so many choices afterwards. Like everybody will grieve. If there's five members of a family there sitting around, each one of those five will grieve differently. And you'll hear one now and again interrupting what plan in the funeral. And I'd have to stop them and say, hold on a second, listen to her point. She's difficulty with that. She doesn't agree with that. And it's very important to include everybody, not exclude them when they're making choices about the disposition. So I have told them whatever way they want to feel, whatever gives them solace and comfort after I'm gone, I'll be up in that happy space. I don't care.
But would you not give them a plan just in case they disagree?
I told them cremation would be my first option.
That's right. There now we're getting more of it. Do you want to be waked in an open coffin?
If it gives them comfort in the... See, there's a grieving process here.
Right.
Right. And it's how to kickstart them into that process.
So I'm getting from you, and you've more experience than most people of this, that your choice is not to be a dictator about your own funeral.
Yeah.
That you have to give the people who are left behind a bit of choice.
You have to give the bereaved who was going to go through that whole grieving process, suffering the loss of you around them, whatever makes them comfortable,
right,
and helps them get through that awful time. People forget about the bereaved at times, you know, but they're going through the whole awful pain of missing you around the place, and that does not go away in the flash. And even some people won't get into that grieving process for 3 to 4 months after.
Yeah, you make a very good point in the book about you're most worried about the person in the grieving family who appear to be calm and composed because there's something going to happen eventually.
Yeah, and the other thing is your grief could be stolen too. If you're so busy becoming an event manager, like organising music, organising film, I'd often stop and say, could you delegate that work out to a few more people there? Because you were busy, and before you know it, the person is cremated or buried. And now you have to start the grieving process on your own.
Yes.
Remember, the rest of the family are grieving with 300 or 400 people around them.
Yeah.
You now have to do it in a single way. And that's not easy.
You've seen huge changes in your life as a funeral director. Mm. I'm wondering, is there any? Can you see any patterns? Are we going in a certain way? Like, will the wake, do you think, always be there? Are more and more people opting for cremation?
Cremation is definitely on the rise.
Why do people? Why when asked, if you ask them, why do they opt for that over interment?
Very few. It's just the process, and even since the documentary, a lot more are asking because they didn't understand it really. And the doc opened it up and explained it properly, showed it, and seeing is believing. And people like that way of disposition of the human remains. A lot of people would have fear of that black hole in the ground.
Mm.
A lot of people like the idea of shaking ashes in a favourite spot.
Yes.
Keeping little keepsakes.
Yes.
All sorts of stuff like that. You can't do that with a direct burial or with a burial of a
And letter. You can bury ashes, can't you?
You can inter ashes. You can do whatever you want.
So you get the best of both worlds.
And
so
you can
to speak.
Do it in a year's time.
Yeah. Now we're running out of time, but can you ask your guest, does he come across many families who don't speak to each other and are at the awkward situation of a funeral?
Yeah.
I suppose you've witnessed it all, haven't you?
Loads and loads and loads of time,
I'm just listening to you from the Sunny Algarve and Dave McGowan, a gentleman at profession who looked after my mother-in-law, Joan, on her journey to the next world. He's an absolute star, says Paul. Great chat. Your guest is wonderful in his knowledge and experience. I never use the awful expression passed or passed away. Why can't people say died? That's the other thing, How you can't tell people what words to use, you know. But
died is final, and I don't think it's final. I think
use past.
I think we've just passed on to another space, and I think, and they also, but I think if there's grieving people listening to us that have lost the biggest loss any human being will ever, talk to the spirit. And if it's not working for you in a church, go surround yourself with nature. The beach is, there's something with the tide. Park your car, but be alone. Don't have anybody diverting your thoughts when you go there. You walk that beach, and whatever it is with the tide and the energy that's used in the pull of the tide, there's a very close connection with the spiritual world there.
A Life Among the Dead, Stories from an Irish Funeral Director, is the new book by Dave McGowan. And if you haven't seen the documentary that David was talking about there, it's available to watch on Netflix. And just a final one there for you. Oh, I wish my mum was alive to hear this man speak. She always said, I couldn't care less what happens to me after I die. I'll be gone. You all do with me what will give you all the most comfort. So we buried her because we wanted somewhere to visit her as such. She always used to say, it's not the dead you need to be afraid of. It's the living. So that's where we started and that's where we finished. Thanks, David. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.